Thanks for tuning in to the SevSell Show. I'm your host, Seven Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly in all things real estate right here at KPPF Saturdays at 10 a.m. You can find us at 95.7 FM, 98.5 FM, and 1040 AM. Today, I would like to introduce you to a very special guest of ours, Josh Kolnitis, the owner of Co-Host Property Management. And of course, we have our guaranteed rate mortgage loan pro, Chris Frankmont. Thank you so much, you guys, for being here with us.
Thanks for having us, Seth.
Yeah, thank you, Seth.
So to just kind of kick off the show here for our starter kit, because I always like to start our guests off with a starter kit. Josh, I want to go ahead and touch base with you on Co-Host, all things Co-Host. What are you? What do you do? Who are you?
Yeah. So Co-Host is really kind of a cool concept, cool company. What we do is we specialize in like fully furnished listings, specifically with the short-term rental side. So there's kind of like this missing gap of solutions out there where a lot of people have this long-term property management solution, but when it comes to the short-term model, which is more like what real estate's taking a vamp towards, no one has anything out there that's a full like start-to-finish solution that comes in, takes care of everything for you, sends a check at the end of the month, and kind of keeps it hands-off for the owners.
So like Airbnb, exactly. Right? Yep. Okay, so you specialize in all things Airbnb.
That's right.
Except without all the stress of having to do your own Airbnb.
Exactly, yeah. And it's kind of interesting, too, because when you bring up the stress, right, a lot of people, this company was started by being in a situation where I needed a management company. I didn't have one. So I essentially worked with somebody else who was out there kind of doing it a little bit on the side, but they weren't really that good at it. And that's essentially what spawned Co-Host was. I was like, I need something that's better. It's more professional. Started doing it myself. And then that essentially grew into what today is now Co-Host.
So is it safe to say that you started Co-Host because you were an unsatisfied client with a short-term rental at one point?
Exactly. Yep, that's correct.
Okay, that sounds good. And how long have you been in business?
So we actually started in like 2018, very early 2018 is when I started just myself. But in terms of actually opening up and taking outside clients, we've only been doing that now for about 5 months.
Okay. Well, congratulations. Yeah, fairly new. How's business?
Oh, it's absolutely incredible. Somebody coming from like a military background to just doing that full time and essentially dropping a full time guaranteed paycheck to run your own business, right? It's overwhelming and there's kind of a lot of like fear that you have when you do it. So kind of seeing that you can actually start a business on your own and you can be successful is really cool.
So it sounds like there were some pitfalls in that industry for you. Mm-hmm. What were some of those pitfalls where it, I don't know if it aggravated you enough inspired you enough to start your own property management company for short-term rentals, but were those pitfalls?
Yeah, so those are some good questions. So initially when I first started, I noticed that I needed to be hands-off. And in trying to be hands-off, there's a lot of like involvement sometimes that the owner had to do, which being in
and
service.
And you were the owner at this point.
Right, at the time, yep, I was the owner. And I was in the service, so I was in the military. We were going in the field, and then I had a deployment coming up. So I was like, okay, I need to essentially take what I have right now, which is a full-time Airbnb, and hand it over to somebody. And when I tried to do that with someone, that specific company, essentially, I noticed things were getting like broken. I had some things broken. I had a TV stolen. I had like a little Alexa thing stolen. There was a vacuum cleaner that was busted up pretty bad. And this was just stuff that like I walked back into the house one day during a cleaning and I just noticed all these things were kind of like wrong. So I started to address it with the company.
And were they collecting from the guests that broke it?
So they didn't even know it was happening. They weren't tracking anything was going on. They didn't fix or replace or do any of that stuff. So it was just kind of like one of those things where I'm like, okay, especially being in the military and being in positions where I have to be accountable for different things and understand like there's supposed to be paper trails and understand, you know, the finer details and attention to detail on things. This was stuff that really bothered me.
Right, right. I mean, and you know, if you're a guest and you show up and things are broken, I feel like that's a bad review waiting to happen. Exactly. I mean, Chris, haven't you had a bad Airbnb experience?
I'm usually the one doing the breaking, actually, Seven, so I'm getting the negative reviews. I prefer when they don't notice, so I'm not sure I support.
So we don't want to rent to you, is what you're saying. Okay, there you go. I love that. And so how have you taken these industry pitfalls, if you will? And I'm not sure that that's all of them. Mm-hmm. You know, like was your house always clean? You know, was it up to standards there? Were you losing money as an owner on makeup on your linens, right?
Yep.
But how have you taken these pitfalls into account in your business, owner of Co-host?
Yeah, so that's another good question. So what was happening and what something I was noticing as an owner at that time was we were kind of getting nickel and dime for all these different things. Like they were having, you know, we were paying for the towels and the expenses. We were paying for turnover stuff. We were paying for like the laundry to be done. We were paying for shovel, like the driveways to be shoveled and stuff, snow cleared, lawn
sprinkler systems getting cleared out. Yeah,
everything. So what started to be one fee by the end of it ended up being like double that just because the amount of profit that was being taken away on all these little charges. It'd been nickel and dimed left and right.
So would you say that that's a fair standpoint for most people in exploring this industry is, they go to do it and then it ends up being twice as much?
And think about like anytime you go to do anything, right? You want whatever you agree to pay is what you want to pay.
Right.
You don't want to find out. Yeah. Like all of a sudden you end up with a half million charges under your belt.
Right.
You're like, this is never stuff that I wanted to deal with.
And and that's something that you were dealing with because the company that you had hired was not taking it into account.
And that really bothered me.
Yeah. So apparently enough to actually start your own company.
Yeah. For real.
There you go. I love that. Yep. And so, I mean, in owning a long-term, short-term, investment property, because you are short-term renting it out for a long-term period of time,
right? Yep.
You know, there's maintenance that comes due on a property, and we all know this, right?
Yep.
How do you keep up on that maintenance?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So what we do is we actually class our properties. So A, B, C, and D class, just like you would any investor would do with their profile and if they're going to look at an investment property. But we class our properties, and anything that's not like an A class property, which means we walk in, we see it's pristine and it's ready to go, we essentially have the owners have to conduct an inspection and then give us that inspection report to see how much deferred maintenance there is.
So do you hire a licensed inspector to give them an inspection report and tell them everything wrong with
the
property?
Exactly, yeah. So we do. We refer out all the business and all the different vendors. I think that's smart. Yeah.
Especially from a liability standpoint. Mm-hmm. I think that that's brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's really smart. I just had a friend calling me asking, should I refi? Should I sell my house? And and because he'd been paying all these deferred maintenance costs, the first thing I said is hire an inspector, spend $500, get more information before you make this decision. Because like you said, that's a huge factor in determining whether it's going to be profitable.
And it's really cool because it's almost like a vetting process now.
Yeah.
Now that we have these systems and stuff in place, it becomes a really cool vetting process that if somebody's not willing to pay, like you said, the $500 to see if their house is working, right, then you could end up with a litany of problems, and that's usually a guest that you just don't want to deal with, or a client that you don't want in your portfolio.
I mean, and it's a bad review waiting to happen. I mean, it's terrible. If you hire a professional inspector and they're like, "Hey, the furnace is on the fritz," you know.
Yep.
Well, now you know that the furnace is on the fritz in comparison to having a guest say, hey, there's no heat in this house and it's snowing and we live in Colorado.
You'd rather have the guest essentially enjoy their stay and not become the inspector for it.
Yeah, and dodge a bad review 100%.
Exactly.
And so what have you implemented within Co-host to make Co-host above par from industry standard? Because I mean, I've been to Airbnbs where I've shown up, walked in the door, and they weren't even turned over, right? The sheets weren't on the bed. They were still dirty. They were still stripped off. Like, I mean, and no one even knew. I couldn't get a hold of the property management for like 3 days.
Right. So there's a lot of cool stuff that we have. And I think our background really defines who we are, right? We're a veteran owned and operated company. So we have that attention to detail in everything we do, every step of the way, right? There's systems and processes and stuff that we've taken from our military experience and brought into the business. And when I say we're a veteran owned and operated.
Wait, hold on. You said our military experience.
Right, exactly.
So you're military. Who else?
So we have at least 3 different people right now that are in the Springs that are in leadership positions. So essentially everybody that's in a leadership position has some sort of military experience prior to.
So you're supporting our troops.
Which is really cool. Exactly, yes.
I love that. Absolutely. That's cool. Yep. That's amazing.
It's actually really cool, too, to add. So as we expand to other cities and we start going to other places, we actually have prior service officers. Right now it's all officers, but, you know, willing to expand to whoever else, but as long as they make the cut, it's kind of cool because each one of these different locations is led by a veteran or prior service military officer.
That's really cool. And so as far as cleanings and stuff, I know that you've had some issues with that before and just hiring that out to a third party.
Exactly.
Yep. Sounds like you have brought that in-house.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that we've done where we've learned, right? As you're running a business, is one of those things that you don't know necessarily by being in the military, but you learn this now as a civilian side. You know what right's supposed to look like, so you're trying to figure it out.
Right.
Well, as you go through, you can't there's a disconnect sometimes in quality control. So if you use vendors and other service providers,
right,
you can't control necessarily the quality that they're using, or you have to fire them and find somebody else. Right?
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. And then it can be an exorbitant cost.
Who wants to work anymore, right?
Right.
We have unemployment.
It's just out of control. So we've actually brought our cleaning and a lot of our services in-house. So
that's
huge. We've built our own teams. We've created our own processes. We have our own warehouses and storage facilities and laundering facilities now. So it's really cool and allows us to keep all of that quality control inside. So when we have our guys go in and inspect, right, because we have a team that goes and actually checks up and makes sure the cleanings were done properly and on time and everything's ready for the next guest. So it's really cool because there's systems, there's processes, there's checklists, there's things
absolutely
that we can do to check everything. So
and it's all in-house.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love that. Yep. I love that. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in to the SevSell show and just kind of listening to all things Airbnb property management here with Josh at Co-Host. Yeah. We are going to take a quick break on exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly on all things real estate right here at KPPF with Josh and Chris from Guaranteed Rate and Co-Host Property Management. And we'll be right back here shortly after a quick break. Thanks for tuning in to the SevSell show. I am your host, Seven Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly in all things real estate right here at KPPF Saturdays at 10 a.m. Don't forget to like and subscribe to us on YouTube at KPPF Radio 1040 a.m. I am here today with Chris Frankmont and Josh Kolnitis, Chris Frankmont with Guaranteed Rate, and Josh with Co-Host Property Management. Now, we just kind of finished up our highlight segment and starter kit with Josh, all right? I want to dive into a market update with Chris. He is the guy with the numbers, the lender, the man with the money. So, Chris, what do you have for us today?
Thanks, Sev. I appreciate it. Yeah, I thought today we'd talk a little bit about the market and how it's evolved over these last 18 months. It's been one of the most volatile times we've ever seen in the market with
what?
Ups and downs. We've ended up with some of the lowest rates we've ever seen and spikes back up. It's been pretty crazy. So the market is a complicated beast. There are a lot of factors that go into it, even more than I understand or can comprehend. But we're going to talk about some of the general things that go into the market, what caused some of this volatility over the last 18 months, and then a little bit about what we can expect for the future.
Absolutely.
So obviously, everyone's heard, I hope you've heard by now, that interest rates have been historically low really since COVID happened. So why did that happen? When COVID first hit, we saw rates tank in a good way. Rates shot down low, lower than they'd ever been before.
So what does that mean for someone who's wanting to purchase?
More purchase power, lower payment. You're looking at the same price house that you were
the month before. More qualifying ability?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Because when we're qualifying someone, we're qualifying them on the total payment amount. It's not really
okay.
A dollar amount of a house. We give a dollar amount to estimate, but we're really qualifying them on the total payment. So when the rate's lower, that total payment's obviously lower. That means they can afford more house.
And when you say rate, it's interest rate.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep, the interest rate.
I mean, and I know from being a homeowner, a vast majority of my first several payments, maybe even several years, I'm paying more in interest than I am in principal, right? So that makes a big difference on your ability to qualify, correct?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And what you're referring to is because of how the loan's amortized, you do pay a ton of interest up front. That goes down. Every payment, you pay a little bit more towards principal, a little less towards interest. But absolutely, lower rates, it's 0.5% lower in rate. That's a huge difference in payment. We're looking at
right.
The average loan amount here. For us, our average loan amount is right around $390,000. We're talking 0.5% in rate. You're talking well over $100 in payment that it's saving you. So it can make a big difference in people's budget.
Absolutely. Especially when you qualify based off from debt to income and credit.
Yep,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So all those come together to look at a qualification. So when COVID hit, or I shouldn't say when it hit, when it became a big deal back in March of 2020, we saw interest rates tank, go down over 0.5% in the matter of just a couple of weeks. So
why?
Absolutely. Why did that really happen? Again, there's a lot of factors, but two of the main ones that contributed to that. One is the flight to safety. So when we see things like COVID come out that really make us question the future, nervous about the future, you see a lot of money come out of the stock market that is really betting on the future and go into those safer investments like treasury bonds or other bonds.
Or like people need a place to live, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But on an investor side is that when money's coming out of the stock market and pouring into the bond market, that actually puts downward pressure on interest rates. The mortgage-backed securities, which are really what is traded on in the secondary market that, that helps determine rates. It's a bunch of mortgages packaged together as an investment for investors. Those are tied really closely to movement in the U.S. Treasury bonds. And so when money's getting dumped into the Treasury bonds, it's pushing rates lower. It's making those bonds actually less and less enticing, and it makes mortgage rates go down. So we saw that happening a lot. The other big thing we saw is support from the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve at times...
printing all that free money this past year. Who's collected unemployment?
that is definitely one thing they were doing was printing some money. But the big one that was affecting mortgage rates was them purchasing these mortgage-backed securities. And so that
times, what is a mortgage-backed security?
So mortgage-backed security is just a bunch of mortgages, a ton of people's home loans all packaged together into this one investment that can be sold in the secondary market.
Okay, so it's kind of like, and correct me if I'm wrong, right? What about that subprime crash of 2008, right? When they took all the turds, they bundled them up and made them look nice and tight and pretty and wrapped them in beautiful bouquets.
Yeah, what's
and
that then movie that them. Does such a good job
talking
Big
about? Short, baby.
Yeah, Big Short.
Short.
That's what it is. Love that movie. Yes. It does an incredible job talking through that.
Is it kind of similar, do you think?
I mean,
what happened this past year?
The way that they're... I mean, the mortgage-backed security has been around a long time. So that movie kind of talks about the origination of those, what was it, the 60s or the 70s when mortgage-backed securities really became a big thing. Really with the Big Short and what you're referring to is are types of mortgage-backed securities are similar packages but with the really shitty loans. And those are, although that is still happening in different ways, not in the same way that it was. And these mortgage-backed securities are really separate from that.
Okay, so here's my question, right? Half of everyone, just shy. Okay. In 2019, when rates were several percent higher than they are today, or let alone last year, because they've gone up just a tad, right? They were purchasing a property for a first time. Okay. And half of them, so this is a quarter of everyone who bought a home in 2019. This is NAR stats, National Association of Realtors, right? Mm-hmm. They were utilizing a down payment assistance program. Okay. Which requires them to only have $1,000 of their own cash and money out of pocket to purchase that property. Are these qualified borrowers, right? Because that's kind of what we ran into in 2008, right?
Sure.
What do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question. There is, I can't speak for all lenders. We all do our own due diligence. There's different programs. I will say that a lot of the major loopholes that created that, there was a huge artificial demand back in 07, 08 for housing, because anyone and everyone could buy a house or buy as many houses as they wanted.
Right, because you walk in, you say, I made $1 million.
100%. Or you make a Microsoft Word document saying your income there is you this go. And you use it. I mean, they didn't care. They weren't checking. A lot of those loopholes have been closed up, especially with the major programs. So what a lot of people don't realize to your question about down payment assistance is that actually just pairs on top of a conventional loan, an FHA loan, or even a VA loan. And so you still have to abide by their guidelines. And their guidelines really have closed a lot of those loopholes. Now, there's still those products out there. There's still brokers doing no income, no asset, no employment, no debt to income loans that are pretty terrifying. I don't mess with those much, but I know they're still out there. That being said, the majority of loans as a whole have gotten much, much better. The quality is definitely far superior to what
it was. So when I make this comparison between now and 2008, you're feeling a lot more confident.
I am. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, back then, nobody saw it coming either. But I think this is a different market dynamic, especially speaking about the springs. I think back then, like we talked about, there was an artificial inflated demand for housing. Now, I think these housing bubbles are going to be more on a local level. And you have to look at a lot of other factors to really see, to analyze each market individually. In the springs, look at the rental market compared to the housing market.
Totally.
It's just as competitive and shooting up. Back in 08, the rental market was stagnant, not moving. As housing prices were climbing, it was an obvious indicator. A lot of smart economists were saying, hey, this makes no sense.
These are demand
for the same thing. These should be moving at least close together, if not in
your So opinion. To conclude the market update here for this week, where are you at?
Yeah, where are we at now?
So, are you like, buy?
I know, we got a little sidetracked. You know, we've had some ups and downs for sure. A lot of volatility, like I talked about.
But not drastic ups and downs.
No, but we are still right now sitting near the lowest rates have ever been, if not the lowest. They are still sitting about where they were at the beginning of COVID and several times throughout. Have they dipped lower than this? Yes, they dipped about 0.5% lower than this several different times in the last 18 months. But where we're sitting right now, we'd never seen rates this low 2 years ago. So it is still a fantastic time to buy.
Bam.
Fantastic time to refi. If we saw these rates 24 months ago, I wouldn't have believed they were real.
I mean, and you go back to the 70s and they were what?
Yeah, I mean, in the 80s, they got up to 18%.
Yeah, there you go. So today's not a bad time to refi,
absolutely,
to look at purchasing a property.
The 30-year average is still twice as much. The rate was double what it is now.
Gives you a strong standpoint as a buyer, for sure. Well, you guys, thank you so much for tuning into the SevSell Show. Chris, thank you very much.
Sev, thanks for having me.
And Josh, thank you again for being on here. We are going to take a quick break, and we will tune up, pick up, and come right back on with you guys for our Dear Sev. Thanks for tuning in to the SevSell Show. I am your host, Seven Murdoch, right here at KPPF. And don't forget to like and subscribe to us on our YouTube channel at KPPF Radio 1040 AM. I'm here today with Chris Frankmont, Guaranteed Rate, and Josh Kolnitis at Co-Host Property Management. Today, we want to go ahead and pick up where we left off with you guys on our Dear Sev, okay? Similar to Dear Abby, we're going to go ahead and do a Dear Sev for you, as always. Now, today's Dear Sev, here's the note that I got from our listeners, okay? I really want to own an investment property, a rental property, but I don't know where to start, okay? I think that this is a phenomenal topic to go ahead and just cover with you guys here today with not only Chris, but also Josh. Josh invests in his own real estate. He has several avenues of investment in real estate. He's gone through some really tricky loans within it. And then Chris, obviously, he's the guy with the money, so he's going to tell you whether you can or can't. So you guys, thank you so much for being here with us again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks, Ev.
So as far as owning a rental property, there are several investment strategies that we all know about. What would you want to share with our listeners, Chris?
Yeah, I would say that people that really want to build a real estate portfolio, the smartest way to do it is being intentional with your primary residences. It sounds like based on the story that Josh did this, and so I'm sure he can share with you firsthand, but
and Josh did it with a VA.
Yeah, absolutely. Great, great way to do it. I mean, incredible cash flow, I'm sure, on those properties. Yeah. But absolutely, the best way to do it is buying primary residences. And then when you buy a primary and then you're ready to buy that next primary and upgrade, keeping the current one and turn it into a rental. Opening a HELOC, a home equity line of credit, far be it before that. So you have access to the equity in the
house. But Chris, what about my debt to income ratio, right?
It's a great question, Seth.
Because I have a loan on my primary. Can I purchase a secondary?
Yeah, absolutely. So it depends on the loan type in terms of how it affects your debt to income ratio. But when you are buying another house and you're going to rent out your current house, there's a lot of different options. On a VA loan, if you're vacating the property, we don't even need a lease agreement. We can just show what the market rental rate is for that property, show that it's a strong rental market, and use that to offset the payment without any lease agreement. That's a tip for a lot of you lenders that probably don't know that.
But, no.
Don't even need it. Conventional.
I should have joined the military. I knew it.
Huh. I know. I keep thinking I should do 6 years in the reserves just there to use the VA loan to get it that great. Absolutely. But it really is, guys. I mean, buying a primary residence takes a lot less money out of your pocket. You get a lot better interest rates.
When you say less money, what is that?
Yes, if you don't have VA benefits, then when you're buying a primary residence.
What is a VA benefit? It's zero down, right?
Being able to do a VA loan. Yep, no down payment. So if that's not an option for
you. But is there a funding fee?
There is a funding fee. We're getting off topic, though.
Okay, all right.
Seth, let me bring us back in.
All right.
Conventional or FHA, minimum down payments, 5% and 3.5% when you're buying a primary residence.
Okay.
When you're buying an investment property, you can't use an FHA loan. And for a conventional, the minimum down payment's 15%. So it's significantly higher. And at 15% down, the interest rate's much higher. The mortgage insurance is higher. You're paying a lot more money to buy that investment property as an investment. Whereas, if you can buy a primary, live there for a year or two, and then you're ready to upgrade, you turn it into a rental, you got to buy it with less down.
I know that you had so much valuable information in that, but what I just heard is you can still fund a non-owner occupied property at 15% down?
Correct, yeah.
Because when I just bought my most recent one, they were like, it's got to be at least 20. They were pushing me for 25. I was about to choke the life out of someone.
Well, yeah, you were misinformed, Sev. You can do it with 15% down. That being said.
So this is why you shop lenders,
that's
right?
That's right. It's why you talk to you.
Talk to Guaranteed Rate.
I still think 20% sit down is a good place to be at. Buy an investment property. You avoid the mortgage insurance. Your rate gets a lot better.
Chris, I disagree. I think cash in pocket, cash in hand is always the way to go.
You know, Sev, there's always a case to be made for that.
But everyone has a different investment strategy, right?
That's exactly right. And that's why our goal is to be an advisor, to show everyone the positives and negatives of 15, 20, and 25% down. Here's your break-even points. Let them decide. I don't know what's best for you and your family. I want to educate you on your options and let you make
them. Yeah, let me overwhelm the crap out of all of you and figure out where to go from there. And Josh, you have a handful of different investment properties as well.
Yeah, right? So when you get into looking at like trying to buy property with as little money as you can, keeping it in your pocket, right? But also trying to get it into a cash flowing asset for you. There's a lot that you can do, especially when you start looking at short term stuff, because at this, you're not putting a lease on the property. You're essentially going on vacation. So you still live there as a primary residence.
Depending on, you know, your mortgage, right? That short term rental history, unless it's 2 years, I think, right? It can't necessarily count for the same amount as a 1 year executed lease agreement would, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a great question. There's an agent right now who's evaluating buying either a second home or an investment property. We went over this. If he buys a second home, he can use it as an Airbnb, but he can't use that income to offset the payment instead of income until it's been on 2 years of taxes.
Let's say he wants to buy a third and you're like, oh, dude, your debt to income is too high.
Yep. So like Josh is saying, you can't have a long-term lease if it's your primary or a second home. You can't have a long-term lease on it. You can do some short-term, but it does. You'll have to have it on taxes to offset your debt to income, but you can acquire properties for less. And as long as you still meet the rules of occupancy laid out in your note, then it can be a good win-win. Buying the investment property, there's more workarounds. There's actually...
And tax write-offs.
Absolutely. So I actually heard recently about a scenario where someone bought investment property that they were using for short-term rentals. They were not able to offset the income because they didn't have it on taxes. They didn't have a long-term
lease. Wasn't 2 years,
they
right?
They ended up getting a lease done with the management company that was managing that property. That management company actually executed a 12-month lease guaranteeing them at least this much per month. And we were able to use that to offset the payment. So with investment properties, a lot more flexibility and freedom, even if you're using it as an Airbnb. For your debt to income and qualifying on future loans.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much you can do.
So Josh, can co-hosts do that?
Absolutely.
There you go. So you'll go ahead and you'll sign a year-long lease saying, I'll rent your property out for $1,200 a month and I'll sit back and I'll make $2,500 and I'll give you, what, was there a percentage back on the short term or for the sublease? Or?
Yeah, I don't want to step on Josh's toes or give too many personal details, but
Let's squeeze him.
Right, in our case, it was written in a way that all parties were happy with, which essentially just guaranteed the client a minimum of this amount per month.
Yep.
That's always the best contract we can have.
We have to run it out 4 days a month, 5 days a month to hit this. No big deal. Right. So they were more than willing to do it. They were running it an average of 25 days a month. So you got to word it in a way that both parties are okay assuming that liability, but it's absolutely doable.
Mm-hmm. And so, Josh, for short-term rentals, your clients on average see about how much more in comparison to a long-term rental every month in profit?
Oh, it's unreal. Like, you wouldn't even believe the numbers. It's crazy, especially when you talk to lenders. They're like, wait, are you serious? Because typically, I'd say it's anywhere from
You're lying.
Yeah, it's like $300 to $800 a month. $800 being really, really good. If you can show $800 of cash flow every month on a long-term lease, you're killing it.
Yeah,
you're
doing
really
true.
Good.
That's
most
true.
Most are probably around $300-$400 or so a month.
But for short term, for what you do.
But if we get into short term stuff, our average clients make anywhere from $3,000 to $4,000 of cash flow. That's what gets deposited into their bank account every single month. So it's
that's
actually
amazing. And that's
wild.
After your management fees.
Exactly. That's after management fees and our management
and
fees
cleaning
aren't
fees?
Cheap either. So
through mailbox money.
And
yeah, exactly.
Fees?
It really is. Yeah, exactly. Everything.
Oh
after
my
the
gosh.
Cleaning and the maintenance and every the management.
And so
fees
if you'll rent
out,
my property out for me. On a year-long lease, okay? Like, why would I not, you know, make $3,000 more a month, especially to have it cancel out my DTI, right? Because that's why a lot of people go for the long-term rental.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep,
absolutely. Is because it cancels out that DTI. Well, you guys, I'm going to go ahead and just conclude this episode with you, okay? Thank you so much for coming on. I really do appreciate everything that you guys have both brought to the table and in this cumulative discussion here today. Josh, co-host, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah,
Chris, guaranteed rate, thank you for being here. If you guys have any questions, okay, you have a Dear Sev that you're curious about, you are wondering, you know, what you should do in any specific certain situation, reach out at sevsells@sevsells.us via email today, and we will go ahead and bring your question onto the show, and we will dive into it here a little bit. Chris, Josh, thank you very much for coming on. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Sev Sells Show. I am your host, Sevin Murdoch, exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly in all things real estate, right here at KPPF Saturdays at 10 a.m. Don't forget to like and subscribe to us on YouTube at KPPF Radio 1040 a.m. Our channels are 95.7 FM, 98.5 FM, and 1040 a.m. And we will see you next week.